What this Iranian thing is all about. You know it as well as I do. I've never seen such bull hockey in my life. Oh, my God. We'll get to that a little bit later in the program. But the national security state and corporate America has decided time for another war. Because we like what Obama's doing. We got to have a war president. You think? Or is that just nonsense? Talk about it in a minute. The BS from the gathering last night of the clowns again, you know, their little debate circle is getting weirder and weirder, isn't it? I don't want to focus a lot on either political party because they both suck. It's just that the Republicans are crazy. You know, there are some sane Democrats who have just simply sold their souls to the capitalist corporate devil that now runs this country. And I'm sure they are ashamed of themselves, but you know, survival of the fittest, right? But the Republican Party is just so chock-a-block with insane people. It's almost pointless except to find humor in talking about them, if you can find humor in this. But I keep going back to this Kane character. You know, here we go again. The polls are showing one poll, maybe two, shows Kane leading in the field of Republican clowns. Now, this is astonishing to me because what Kane wants to do is to bring into effect the largest tax increase on middle and lower income Americans pretty much in history with this 999 nonsense. It sounds like, you know, it sounds like the price of one of his large pizzas. 999, just the 9% national sales tax. That would mean people in Florida, where I think the people of Florida gave Kane a number one in their little straw poll, their poll sampling. What am I trying to say? In a survey. And so that would mean that people in Florida are voting for a 15% sales tax. You know, that's, I mean, how out of touch with reality have Republicans become? Not just the candidates, but the freaks who answer these polling questions, the people who vote Republican, it's just madness, madness, madness. And at the same time, this 9% national sales tax, he would reduce corporate taxes to 9%. Now, a lot of these corporations don't pay anything now, so that part of it is just a joke. And personal taxes to 9%, which means that the people who are on the earned income tax credit will all of a sudden have to pay taxes. So what Kane is suggesting here is an absolute rupturing of what's left of this thin membrane that keeps this country alive. You talk about pro-abortion. Now, Kane has been real slick with regard to where this cracked up, crazy-ass idea came from. And, you know, how he came to these numbers. And when a Bloomberg reporter Juliana Goldman suggested that a Bloomberg analysis of the game plan cast doubts, I love the diplomatic language, cast doubts on its ability to meet revenue goals and cast it as regressive for middle and low income Americans. Duh. Bloomberg has to figure that out. The average sixth grader, no, hell no, I take it back. Molly's in the second grade. She could sit down with a pencil and paper and figure out 6 + 9 = 15. Molly knows how to do that. 6% sales tax, Molly. And if you add a 9% sales tax on top of that, what do you have? Oh, Daddy, these make my head hurt. No, that's right. Go ahead. What do you have? 15. Right. But the average Republican poll answerer in Florida can't do that. For some reason, I don't get it. So anyway, when Juliana Goldman suggested that he's full of bat crap, Kane said to an audience that was amused by his directness, you audiences that want directness, I can give you directness. Listen to this program. I'll give you more directness than your little pea pod brains can handle. But they giggled when he said, the problem with your analysis is that it is incorrect. Oh. He said Bloomberg based its analysis on the wrong assumptions. But he declined to reveal the assumptions that his plan was based on. this is how it works. You know, these clowns, all right-wingers, all Republicans, all Christians, and I'm going to leave the Jews and Muslims out here for a minute, but the Christians, you know, it's the same thing. You got to accept everything on faith. It is the way it is because I tell you it is. What? Yeah, it is. If you think the planet is more than 6,000 years old, you're wrong. Yeah, but I have the proof here. Your proof is wrong. But no, it's wrong. Oh, okay. And if you challenge me again, I will pray you into hell.
Oh, I don't want that to happen.
When asked to name the economic experts who drew up his 999 plan, Kane was only able to name one, Rich Lowry of Cleveland, Ohio, who turns out to be a wealth management strategist for the Wells Fargo Bank. Jesus God! So you can imagine the plan would be a boon to those who have wealth to manage, right? 999. Who came up with this, Kane? By the way, how's Abel? 999. Who came up with it?
Economists.
Name one. Now, Lowry, this Rich Lowry, according to his LinkedIn profile, he served for 3 years on the advisory board of, this is surprising, 3 years on the advisory board of Americans for Prosperity. That's the Tea Party organization launched by billionaire David Koch, with which Kane is closely linked, of course. Kane's campaign manager is Mark Block, the former state director for the Wisconsin chapter of Americans for Prosperity. And this dude oversaw the group's triumphant efforts in helping to elect Governor Scott Walker and the Tea Party-allied Republican majority in the Wisconsin legislature. Da, 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 da. This is your Herman Cain. Questioned after the debate by Bloomberg's Margaret Brennan, Kane explained that his 9% national sales tax was not regressive for this reason. Now listen closely. Quote, Herman Kane, if you look at it closely, we had it evaluated by using dynamic analysis. If you look at it closely, prices don't go up. Plus, consumers have the option to stretch their dollar because of buying used goods versus new, end quote. So there's your new economic plan, America. This is the Coke-style plan. Prices won't go up because I say they won't, but if they do, just buy the kids' school clothes at the Salvation Army. Well, now, isn't that nice? We'll be right back.
Flying Monkey Right, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, just a little bit more about the group of clowns last night. Herman Cain is a piece of work. I don't know what it is that the Republicans, the voters, find attractive about him. On the other hand, what am I saying? Republicans are morons, you know, and I guess I don't know what it is. Does race enter into this? I can't figure it out. Does pizza enter into it? Because this is not a very bright man. He was the CEO of Godfather Pizza. How do I know he's not a very bright man? Listen to him? I mean, you know. I don't know. There's something going on here. And nobody knows what it is. Anyway, Michelle Bachmann took her own shot at Cain's 999 plan. Did you, have you heard what she said? This woman is just goofier than an outhouse rat. I swear she is. She's out of her mind. She said, and I watched this, I've seen this clip about 50 times now today. I don't know who she was looking at. I guess the audience, I don't know. They were sitting in a circle. I guess they've heard me referred to as a circle jerk, and they've decided to follow up on that. But, she said either to Herman or to the audience, when you take the 999 plan and you turn it upside down, I think the devil's in the details. The upside down 999, you know, the mark of the beast, 666, the mark of the beast. What the hell does that mean? Somebody should tell Michelle Bachmann that the mark of the beast was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Wilson Reagan. 666. These people are so absorbed. I mean, you have a couple of Mormons on this panel of morons. You have Christian fundamentalists, Armageddonists. I don't know. It's just insane. 666. Michelle cannot pass up an opportunity to dump her dominionist, let's all get naked and float up to Jesus riff on people. It's astonishing. So there she sits. National TV informing the pizza man that 666 is the mark of the beast, and that's only an inverted 999. I could see John Huntsman sitting there with his head in his hands like, what in the hell am I doing here? Good question, Mr. Huntsman. And you had a nice job as ambassador to China, didn't you? And, you know, appointed by Barack Obama, right? And then you had to resign. You thought that you... Okay, never mind. I wonder when Michelle is going to point out to the pizza man that the biblical origin of his name is that of the first murderer. Herman, are you ready for that one? She's coming, baby. She's coming. Go upside her head with a pizza. That's what you need to do, Herman, when she lays that one on you. She's already got you with the 999-666. Woohoo! Wait till she tells you you were the biblical first murderer. Oh, these people. My God. Where was I? I mean, I don't know. Mark of the Beast. With that little psycho grin on her face. Are you getting tired of seeing that? I mean, that must have been the sort of grin that the Inquisition questioners had on their faces. You know, when they had some poor Jew or some poor Muslim sitting in front of them. And, you know, asked, well, do you believe in the Lord Jesus? I can't say it in Italian or Spanish. Do you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ? And, the Muslim or the Jew sitting there going, okay, I got to make a quick decision here. If I answer wrong, I noticed all those things on the way in here, those torture devices. What's that thing? It looks like an Egyptian coffin. It's got all those nails on the inside. Damn, they put people in. I'm a Christian! Hell yeah, I believe in the LJC! You bet I do! Whew. Is this Wednesday night, Kathy? That's what it is. That's what it is. Okay. I knew that there was some reason these religious... It's church night on the Malloy program. We'll be right back. This hour is sponsored by Jeff Young in Australia. Thanks, Jeff. His message, he's got a couple of them here. Homo sapiens has the information to know itself for what it is. An Ice Age hunter, only half evolved toward intelligence, clever but seldom wise. It's a quote by Ronald Wright, A Short History of Progress. Jeff Young is this hour's sponsor. Oh, he has another one here, too. When you are surrounded by something so big that requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is the natural response. But the longer we wait, the bigger the response required. Paul Gilding... in the Great Disruption. Well, isn't that interesting? Jeff, thank you. Thomas Friedman, who is a columnist, among other things, a columnist for the New York Times, as you know, I very seldom agree with anything that Friedman writes. I find him to be a very interesting writer. And he's not a right-winger, but he's a globalist. He's a free trader. He's a big supporter of... regulated capitalism, as if such a thing could possibly exist. But Friedman had something today in the Times that dovetails perfectly with what Jeff Young said in his sponsorship. This is what Friedman had to say. I'm not going to quote the whole column, but he said, Paul Gilding, the Australian environmentalist and author of the book The Great Disruption, argues that these demonstrations, the ones erupting from Tunisia to Tel Aviv to Wall Street, these demonstrations are a sign that the current growth-obsessed capitalist system is reaching its financial and ecological limits. Ooh. Gosh, that's, I hate to say it, but that's what we've been talking about on this program for how long? Anyway, quote from Paul Gilding. I look at the world as an integrated system. So I don't see these protests or the debt crisis or inequality or the economy or the climate going weird in isolation. I see our system in the painful process of breaking down, end quote. Which, Friedman says, is what he means by the great disruption. Gilding goes on, quote, our system of economic growth, of ineffective democracy, of overloading planet Earth, our system is eating itself alive. Occupy Wall Street is like the kid in the fairy story saying what everyone knows but is afraid to say. The emperor has no clothes. The system is broken. Think about the promise of global market capitalism. If we let the system work, if we let the rich get richer, if we let corporations focus on profit, if we let pollution go unpriced and unchecked, then we will all be better off. It may not be equally distributed, but the poor will get less poor. Those who work hard will get jobs. Those who study hard will get better jobs, and we'll have enough wealth to fix the environment. Paul Gilding goes on. What we now have, most extremely in the U.S., but pretty much everywhere, is the mother of all broken promises. Yes, the rich are getting richer, and the corporations are making profits, with their executives richly rewarded. But meanwhile, the people are getting worse off, drowning in housing debt and or tuition debt. Many who worked hard are unemployed. Many who studied hard are unable to get good work. The environment is getting more and more damaged, and people are realizing their kids will be even worse off than they are. This particular round of protests may build or may not. But what will not go away is the broad coalition of those to whom the system lied and who have now woken up. It's not just the environmentalists or the poor or the unemployed. It's most people, including the highly educated middle class, who are feeling the results of a system that saw all the growth of the last 30 years go to the top 1%. End quote. Paul Gilding. Now, Friedman goes on, and he cites John Hagel III, who's the co-chair of the Center for the Edge Center. What is this? I don't know. Some other organization who does not quite see it so badly, see everything so badly in such a poor light, although he's close. But then Friedman closes his column by saying, he goes back to Gilding. He says, Gilding is actually an optimist at heart. He believes that while the great disruption is inevitable, humanity is best in a crisis. And once it all hits, we will rise to the occasion and produce transformational economic and social change. The other guy, the one I'm not quoting, is also an optimist. He knows the great disruption may be barreling down on us, but he believes that the big shift, that's what he believes in. Gilding believes in the great disruption. The other guy believes that there's something going on called the big shift. Anyway, he believes that the big shift has also created a world where more people than ever have the tools, talents, and potential to head off disaster. My heart, Friedman says, is with Hegel, the big shift guy. But my head says that you ignore gilding at your peril. Now, that's about the closest I've ever come to reading a Friedman column. And, of course, it's not Friedman's words. It's the guy that Jeff Young in Australia quoted tonight when he sponsored this hour, the author of The Great Disruption. And the quote that Jeff included in his sponsorship is, when you are surrounded by something so big that requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is a natural response. But the longer we wait, the bigger the response required. Well, Jeff Young, thank you for the sponsorship today and the serendipity or kismet or coincidence, whatever you want to call it, of your quote coming from the same author, quoted extensively in Friedman's column today. The great, or the, what is it? The Great Disruption? But, you know, even to see this in Friedman's column, Paul Gilding, the Australian environmentalist and author of the book The Great Disruption, argues that these demonstrations are a sign that the current growth-obsessed capitalist system is reaching its financial and ecological limits. Yes, indeed. Another example of the betrayal of, I want to say the betrayal of Barack Obama, even though we betrayed ourselves in believing him. But he did make statements when he was running for president. We have the next betrayal coming up here. New free trade agreements that Obama lied through his ass about when he was running for president. I wonder how many of my liberal or progressive or left-wing colleagues are still going to maintain that Barack Obama is a progressive or a liberal. Barack Obama is a captive at best. At worst, he's just another slimy politician. But last week, Obama broke his campaign commitment and put three free trade agreements up for a vote in Congress. David Bacon, writing at truthout.org in a news analysis, points this out. Business interests, ecstatic at the prospect, promise they'll bring us jobs. Yeah, free trade agreements. One of the callers mentioned this last night. Colombia, South Korea, and Panama. Experience tells us, however, their promises are worthless. And as David Bacon writes, 19 years ago, when the NAFTA agreement was in Congress, supporters said it, too, would create jobs and protect labor rights. Before agreeing to new free trade treaties with Colombia, South Korea, and Panama, Congress should look at the dismal record. And then David Bacon lays out the two promises that Barack Obama broke, and that Bill Clinton, you know, keep in mind that our two latest greatest so-called liberal Democrat presidents, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, have done nothing but be the two slices of bread that covered up the slab of ham that was George W. Bush. The programs and policies of Clinton, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama are the same policies and programs of any corporatist that you can think of who might have been in the position of Barack Obama or Bill Clinton. We'll be right back.
Well, I'm bound to follow my conscience, and I'll do whatever I can. Take much more than a union law to knock the fight out of a working man. And which side are you on, boys? We side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Jeff Young in Australia. Thanks, Jeff. And he has another quote here that is the message with his sponsorship. This one is from Naomi Klein. Why do so many people seek to deny climate change science? Because to accept it will challenge their entire worldview. Naomi Klein. I don't know, man. Jeff Young is sponsoring the next hour, too. Thank you, Jeff. Now, back to free trade agreements that Obama has presented to Congress for a vote. And you know what the Congress is going to do. That's the reason Obama submitted them, because he was told to. And the Congress is being told what to, how to vote. All right, here's promise number one. According to David Bacon at writing at Truth Out, a typical pro-business study predicted in 1992... that NAFTA would create 130,000 U.S. jobs in 2 years, double U.S. exports to Mexico, and create 600,000 jobs in Mexico. Today, Tom Donahue, CEO of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, repeats the promise, saying that these three new treaties also, quote, are about creating jobs, end quote. But according to the Economic Policy Institute, between 1993 and 2004, the U.S. trade deficit with Mexico ballooned by $107 billion, which cost the United States 1,015,290 jobs, 123,000 of them in California. But although those jobs went south, Mexico lost far more jobs because of the treaty than those relocated from the United States. Mexico lost 1 million jobs just in the first year the treaty took effect, because the treaty allowed U.S. grain companies to dump corn in Mexico. And because of that, over 1 million farmers lost their livelihood as well. Dumping pork products in Mexico also cost another 120,000 jobs. Eliminating Mexico's domestic content laws cost the jobs of thousands of auto parts workers. 6 million people from Mexico came to live and work in the United States as a result of all this. The Colombian Free Trade Agreement has a provision identical to that in NAFTA, which led to the corn dumping in Mexico. So the farmers in Colombia will be uprooted also. This is your liberal, progressive, democratic president, folks. Do you care? Nah, hell no. Neither do I. I'm just saying. I couldn't care less about this. But I find it ironic that Barack Obama, who made all sorts of promises, turns out to be a liar. And, oh, you right-wingers, not about his birth certificate, you dumbasses. Why don't you get real about his policies? Oh, never mind. What am I talking about? Now, Panama. Enrique Athanasiadis. Ooh, henceforth, I'll refer to him as Enrique. He's the president of Panama's National Agricultural Organization. He says, quote, "We are certain that the free trade agreement will cause great displacement in the Panamanian agriculture sector, of which 40% of our nation's population depends." We Panamanians do not want to follow the Mexicans and Central Americans in the flood of immigrants to the United States, where many risk their life trying to be able to make a living. Forced displacement and immigration describes Mexico's experience under NAFTA, which is almost identical to the U.S.-Panama Free Trade Agreement, end quote. Now, according to David Bacon at Truthout, according to the Economic Policy Institute, Obama's free trade agreement with Korea will cost 159,000 U.S. jobs in 7 years, especially in electronics. And, of course, in the last decade alone, we've lost 6 million high-wage manufacturing jobs because of these horrific, except to the capitalists, free trade agreements. And you right-wingers, you don't understand any of this, do you? You Republicans, you conservatives, you're willing to sit back on your ridiculous asses and let somebody like Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh tell you that Barack Obama's responsible for this? You morons. You complete morons. Promise number two. People who supported NAFTA, supporters promised a NAFTA labor side agreement would protect the right to join unions and raise wages in Mexico. Just in the past 2 years, the Mexican government fired 44,000 electrical workers to destroy their union and helped a giant mining company break a 4-year strike. NAFTA did nothing to prevent those or other violations of labor rights. Mexican wages have declined since the treaty took effect, producing more unemployed workers, more displacement, and more forced migration. And this is going to be the story in Colombia, where over 2,850 trade unionists have been murdered in the last 25 years. Some of them murdered at the instructions of American corporations. Now, there's a little bit more about this that I want to share with you, so we'll do it when we come back from this break. But this is Barack Obama's 3 new free trade agreements with Colombia, South Korea, and Panama. I mean, this is just astonishing. The goal, you understand what the goal is. I'll tell you what the goal is when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Website posts the fact that all 3 trade agreements have passed the U.S. Congress. They are now law. Let me go on. Anyway, the second promise that Obama broke, or I should say he lied about, was the a side agreement would protect the right to join unions and would, in fact, raise wages in these various companies or countries. That's the same thing that was promised to Mexico when NAFTA was passed. But in the past 2 years, like I mentioned before the break, the Mexican government fired 44,000 electrical workers to destroy their union, helped a giant mining company break a four-year strike. This is going to be the story in Colombia, too, where 2,850 trade unionists have been murdered in the past 25 years. Just 3 weeks ago, Isidro Rivera Barrera, an activist in the Colombian Oil Workers Union, was repairing a washing machine in front of his home when a gunman jumped off the back of a motorcycle and shot him three times at point-blank range. The assassination followed a demonstration in which contract oil workers blocked roads and cut production in Puerto Gaitan for 3 days, while their Canadian employer, you see, a capitalist is a capitalist is a capitalist, accused them of being, quote, armed criminals. They were trade unionists. Colombian unions call the toothless side agreement proposed to protect their labor rights a fig leaf solely, quote, intended to ensure ratification, end quote. And as David Bacon writes at Truth Out, union leaders in South Korea also have been arrested repeatedly and imprisoned. But there are no protections proposed at all for workers in South Korea or Panama. Caterpillar Corp., you've heard of them, calls Colombia, quote, a good place to conduct business, end quote. Oh, you know what that means. Tech America, which lobbies for Silicon Valley firms, says the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, quote, will give U.S. tech companies a competitive edge while strengthening free markets, enhancing stability, and fostering democracy, end quote, all of which is a goddamn lie. It is a lie. Higher profits and a competitive edge, so-called, don't ensure companies will keep jobs here. According to the Economic Policy Institute's founder, Jeff Fox, says, quote, as companies become multinational, whether they produce in America is irrelevant to their investors and top managers. Rather, these agreements provide global corporations with the opportunity to outsource production from the U.S. market. How long do you think it'll be now before Panama, South Korea, and Colombia start American corporations, Canadian corporations, transnational corporations, some of whom are based in the United States, will begin closing more American factories, more jobs. Now, for you people who wonder what the Occupy this and Occupy that, the demonstrations are about, this is what they're about. And David Bacon closes with this piece he wrote yesterday. Congress should listen. Free trade treaties that throw more workers on the street, undermine labor rights, and lead to forced migration are political suicide. For Democrats especially. Democratic candidates will need and will look for workers' votes next year. Regardless of promises about a stimulus or a new jobs bill, working families will not forget how they voted on these job-killing treaties. I mean, it just never stops. Now, what's the rationale behind this? I mean, a lot of people, you know, just like Jeff Young in his sponsorship of these 2 hours, he uses the quotes from Paul Gilding, Ronald Wright, and Naomi Klein. And this one by Paul Gilding, when you are surrounded by something so big that requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is a natural response. That applies here, too, not just with the reality of global climate change. Even though we went through the NAFTA Free Trade Agreement, so-called, and the GATT, General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, which resulted in, and I don't know, Prairie 2, every once in a while, let me know, it was 20,000, 50,000 U.S. factories closed down. Millions upon millions upon millions of jobs left, never to return. They're never coming back. Never. and now this. All right, so what's it about? Well, the goal of the capitalists in this country, because a lot of people say, well, you know, this doesn't make any sense. So they're befouling their own nest. No, well, they may be, but that's not how they see it. The goal of capitalism is to eliminate entirely the good-paying lifetime jobs that the native U.S. workforce depended on for the past three generations, and which built the middle class. Now, those three generations of American workers who received good pay for being the most productive workers on earth. Their productivity made the capitalists rich too, but not rich enough. The capitalists always want it all. The greed is insatiable. And capitalism is a system that knows no limits. It wants no boundaries, no restrictions. It is predatory. Look around if you don't believe. Come on, you right-wing smart asses who lay out there in the weeds and listen to this program and every once in a while call in and start cussing. Think about it. No, never mind. You can't do that. Never mind. Go watch Dancing with Your Mama or whatever the hell is on tonight. So the free trade agreements have made it possible for the capitalists to take the jobs out of the United States with no penalty, no tariffs imposed when the products that are produced now in different countries come back in the United States, and they sit around and wonder why nobody has any money to buy this garbage. Because it's produced now with workers making 1/10, 1/20, 1/50 the wage U.S. workers used to make, and the corporations used to make decent profits here, but it wasn't enough. A ratio of 40-1. For the CEOs over the worker on the floor was not good enough. What was good enough? 100-1, not good enough. 1,000-1, not good enough. More and more and more. The goal is to completely destroy the U.S. middle class and replace it with workers who are forced to come here from these countries, forced to come here because their home economies have been destroyed by the capitalist greed and the free trade agreements. And once they get here, what? And that great morning when capitalism finally destroys the middle class in this country and everybody is working for whatever wages, like Michelle Obama is a classic example of one of the stooges for this crazed capitalism. She talks about eliminating the minimum wage and eliminating, or is it Rick Perry, also eliminating the child labor laws. Why, of course, you rancid sons of bitches. Of course, that's what you want to do. Of course, that's what you are being ordered to do by the people who own you. Your Jesus doesn't own you. Your God doesn't own you. These capitalist monsters own you. So when it comes to that point where the average job in the United States will be paying $2.50 an hour, somebody from Colombia or Panama or Nicaragua or Mexico or Guatemala or wherever will just be real goddamn glad to come here and take the job. Do you understand it now? Just an alley dreamer.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Jeff Young in Australia, who included a couple of quotes here that he wanted me to rotate through his sponsorships. Naomi Klein, why do so many people seek to deny climate change science? Because to accept it will challenge their entire worldview. Thanks, Jeff. Just got an email from, by the way, I keep saying Michelle Obama. I mean Michelle Bachmann wants to eliminate the federal minimum wage. Sorry for doing that. That's ridiculous. Just got an email here from, who sent this? Oh, I don't know. Damn. Jessica. I think it was from Jessica, who is the director of the Minnesota Fair Trade Coalition. Jessica, all right, there, come on, Mike. Letween, Jessica Letween. This is the Minnesota Fair Trade Coalition statement on the congressional approval tonight of this these agreements. When Congress passed the Korea, Colombia, and Panama free trade agreements tonight, it voted to export hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs, reward labor and human rights offenders, harm our planet, and perpetuate tax evasion. Despite years of protest against unfair trade policies by Americans of all political affiliations, a majority of members of Congress chose to prioritize Wall Street and multinational corporations over their own constituents. This is a win for the top 1% of income earners, while the other 99% of us will be left to foot the bill. Fortunately, Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison and Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum took a strong stand for working families and against corporate greed by opposing all three trade deals. Four members of the Minnesota delegation split their votes, and she names them. The Korea deal alone threatens over 50,000 good-paying Minnesota jobs. This hits hard in a state that has already seen tens of thousands of jobs lost to failed trade policies, with families losing health care, savings, retirement, and homes as a result. While the Minnesota delegation to Congress may have split its votes on trade, polls show a majority of voters agree the pro-corporate, anti-middle-class policies perpetuated tonight by Congress are sinking working families across our country. The consequences of these votes tonight will linger for years to come. Hopefully, the growing movement against greed and government corruption will be strong enough to hold those who approve these pacts accountable for their actions. From the Minnesota Fair Trade Coalition. I don't think we can hold them accountable, though. How do we do that? How do we do that? And don't tell me we vote them out of office. We don't have the capability of voting people out of office unless the capitalists want them voted out. You should know that. If you have any doubts about this, for God's sake, just go to Brad Friedman's website, bradblog.com, and look at what he has written over the past, pick a number, 5 years? Election fraud after election fraud after election fraud. No, not voter fraud. Election fraud. Now, what's it going to take? I don't want to disagree with Jessica Letween too strongly here, but she references the people, the growing movement against greed and government corruption, the Occupy operations. That's just the beginning. That's a toe in the water. What it's going to take to stop this is not, 6,000 people showing up here or 10,000 people showing up there or 8,000 over there or 900 down here or 300 over there. What it's going to take is going to be millions of American, formerly American middle class workers, joined by millions of the working poor, joined by millions of the unemployed. That's what it's going to take. 3,000 people in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. is only a start. If you want to see this stop, then deliver 300,000 people to Freedom Plaza, and then deliver 3 million people to the streets of Washington, D.C., and 3 million more in New York, and another 3 million in San Francisco and Chicago, until the goddamn machine is forced to stop. That's the only way it's going to happen.
Everything is gonna be all right. Everything is gonna be all right. Saw the boss come walking down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night. Fate is out there busting somebody else's.
Flying monkeys on the air, flying monkeys everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Jeff Young in Australia. A quote that he included from Ronald Wright's book, A Short History of Progress. Homo sapiens has the information to know itself for what it is, an Ice Age hunter only half evolved toward intelligence, clever but seldom wise. Clever, but seldom wise. From Robert. Hi, Mike. Senator Sanders talked about those trade agreements today on the Senate floor. If you missed it and are interested, check his Twitter. He posted 4 short YouTubes about those horrific agreements. Example, I was not aware that South Korea has some labor performed in North Korea, and we will indirectly be financially supporting North Korea. Peace, with quotes around it, Robert. Peace. Yeah, okay. And from David in St. Paul, Mike, we can look at what Obama said on the campaign trail. He stated he would put his walking shoes on and walk the picket line. That never happened. Obama didn't even mention the Madison protests when they were occurring, let alone walk the picket line. If he cannot support teachers or nurses or firefighters in this country, how can he support union workers in Colombia, Korea, etc.? Same blank, different Democratic president. What will it take? Well, it'll take billions of us in the streets. Like I said, the occupation movement and the October 2011 movement put together, among others, by Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers in Washington, D.C., is a beginning. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, there was a 10-year report done on the effects of NAFTA in 2004 on each of the countries involved in the treaty. And in addition to what you've mentioned, that report said that not only had manufacturing jobs declined in Mexico, the average manufacturing wage had declined as well, from $3.15 an hour to $2.85 an hour. As importantly, the moment the manufacturing workers attempted to unionize plants, the maquiladora simply picked up and left, leaving horrible hazardous waste problems. That was another thorny issue brought up in the report. Even 10 years after the implementation of the treaty, protocols for disposition of hazardous waste were still being negotiated. The only entities to benefit from NAFTA were the multinational companies that could move goods through the free trade zones created by the treaty. Every country lost jobs. Manufacturing wages suffered. So-called free trade treaties that don't include environmental and union protections are ultimately destructive. Michael and Roswell. And that's so true. And the grim truth is there's not a capitalist out there who gives a goddamn about the environment, who cares not a whit about unionized workers. As a matter of fact, their entire goal is to destroy, to absolutely crush any union movement, any place on earth. Absolutely destroy it. To the degree that there are American corporations who, under the cloak of, supporting the fascist government that makes it easy for them to exploit the workers in that country, they will provide these American corporations the wherewithal for death squads. This has been going on for so damn long. I mean, it's just death squads to utterly and absolutely eliminate people who might go to work organizing workers in these countries. And again, a two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, General Smedley Butler, yada, 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 wrote in War is a Racket. Just look it up. Just do a Google on War is a Racket. I wish some of you right-wingers would just do that. I mean, Smedley Butler was not a liberal. Smedley Butler was a double Congressional Medal of Honor winner. He was a general. He was a fighter. And he finally realized, like Veterans for Peace realize now, why we send troops into other countries. Just read it. I dare you. I dare all of you. Just read it. Just Google General Smedley Butler. You don't have to wade through an entire book. Just read some of what he said of what was going on in this country, or being promoted by the government of this country in the first 10, 15 years of the 20th century. Just read it. Just read it, if you dare. Most of you are terrified to do that. As Paul Gilding writes, when you are surrounded by something so big that requires you to change everything about the way you think and see the world, then denial is a natural response. So many right-wingers cannot go get the facts. The real facts, the objective facts, not the garbage pumped into their empty heads by Beck and the rest of these paid assassins. But the real facts. I mean, the stuff that's out there, the historical truth. Just take a look. You can't do it, can you? God damn. That's a shame. In the meantime, the capitalists have decided that it's time for war with America, or with Iran. I heard Peter King today being interviewed by the once and former and current, I'm sure, Mossad agent who works for CNN, Wolf Blitzer. And Wolf and Peter King had this great discussion about the fact that, and it was fun to listen to Wolf Blitzer keep tossing softballs to Peter King, a Zionist at the very bottom of his heart, along with being a total, total anti-Muslim, anti-Arab kind of person, you know, the congressman from New York. But to listen to the Mossad agent toss Peter King these softballs that Peter King then knocked out of the studio, it was just unbelievable. But Peter King went so far as to declare what Eric Holder and his staff said. It sounds like something written, a script written in Hollywood, which is exactly what it is. This Iranian attempt to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in the United States, Peter King was referring to it as an act of war against the United States. There you go. An act of war against the United States. That's Obama's cover to go ahead and enlist the aid of the Israelis to attack Iran. Now, let's all hope that that doesn't happen. But Peter King was just frothing at the mouth. And Wolf Blitzer was in his inimitable way also. Wolf Blitzer doesn't froth about anything, but his way of frothing at the mouth was to continue to feed half-witted questions to this moronic Peter King, and Peter King continued to say, act of war, act of war, act of war. Now, the irony about all this, of course, to accuse a different country of attempting to enter the United States and assassinate someone is, I mean, the irony is so goddamn ludicrous, it almost causes you to want to gouge your eyes out or stick pencils deep into your eardrums. What did we just do in Yemen? What did we do in Pakistan? What have we been doing over and over and over again, if not illegally entering other people's countries and assassinating people we don't like, up to and including American citizens now? And these people have the audacity to stand there and say, how dare the Iranians, even though the plot is a bunch of bullcrap. From Mother Jones Online, four things you need to know about the Iran bomb plot. First, the assassination was never going to take place. On Tuesday, FBI Director Robert Mueller described Iranian-American Mansour Arabisian's alleged plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the United States as straight out of a Hollywood script. In a sense, he was right, because the plot was controlled from the beginning by the FBI. According to the criminal complaint, when Arbasiar, that's the Iranian used car salesman, traveled to Mexico in May, to allegedly find an assassin from the ranks of Mexican drug cartels, he ended up talking to a paid DEA informant who dodged drug charges in exchange for cooperating with authorities. In keeping with previous sting cases, the FBI was careful to record statements from Arbasiar dismissing the possibility of numerous civilian casualties, something that makes an entrapment defense all but impossible to mount. Two, the U.S. thinks Iran is responsible. The criminal complaint states that Arbasiar believed his cousin, Ali Gholam Shakouri, was a member of the Al-Quds force, an elite faction of Iran's Revolutionary Guards. Under interrogation, the used car salesman allegedly identified two men who were known to the United States to be senior members of the Quds Force, one of whom allegedly met with his cousin in Iran to discuss the operation. More when we come back. Just, oh my God.
Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound?
Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Okay, very quickly. The third of the four things you need to know about the Iran bomb plot, as posted tonight by MotherJones.com. Third thing, so much for Miranda rights holding interrogation. Arabasiar, the used car salesman, was arrested in late September, but he wasn't brought before a judge until Tuesday. That's because when he was arrested at the airport upon returning from another trip to Mexico, he, quote, knowingly and voluntarily waived his Miranda rights and his right to speedy presentment, end quote. So not only did he cooperate with interrogators, he flipped and implicated his cousin, Shakouri, by calling him and discussing the plot while the FBI was listening in, and all without waterboarding. Four. So about targeted killing. The New York Times' Charlie Savage recently reported on the contents of the legal memo authorizing the targeting of recently killed radical cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, which concluded that Mr. al-Awlaki could be legally killed if it was not feasible to capture him because intelligence agencies said he was taking part in the war between the United States and al-Qaeda and posed a significant threat to Americans as well. As well as because Yemeni authorities were unable or unwilling to stop him, end quote. Well, Iran could make similar arguments about the Saudi ambassador if they felt so inclined, if they wanted to justify the plot, true or otherwise, all of which is to say that those rules may not be enough of a framework to prevent a future in which other countries that acquire drone technology decide to use them to eliminate their stated enemies as frequently as does the United States. Through the looking glass, boys and girls. Did I mention this hour and the last hour has been sponsored by Jeff Young in Australia? Thank you, Jeff, very, very much. I appreciate it. From Ron in Pennsylvania, Mike, so Obama's wimpy jobs bill was strangled in the crib by the Republicans, and yet the portion of the bill dealing with the free trade agreements with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama passed? I'm sick to my stomach. What's new? And I suspect, as you alluded to, it's going to take more than the paltry turnout at the various Occupy positions to make the bastards ease up. But I look around Philly, and all the doggies go about their doggy lives as if nothing is happening, all whistling in the dark. It's going to get much uglier, isn't it? Like, real ugly. Like, medieval. Ron, lost in PA. P.S. Year two of my layoff from Temple University. Mortgage is 2 weeks late. Yeah, it is coming. I hope it stays nonviolent, but at some point, the vanguard of this protest movement is already on the street and has been out there for several weeks now in some instances. And the morons in this country, whether they're right-wingers or politicians or the media, still can't figure out why the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Washington, Occupy this, Occupy that is occurring. Willful, blatantly willful ignorance. You don't want to know. All right, very simply put, capitalism is collapsing. Capitalism is collapsing. Not because somebody is destroying it from without. It is being destroyed from within. From within the capitalist system. Part of the reason for its interior destruction is that it cannot sustain itself. It is eventually self-limiting, and it has occurred. The limits have been reached. And the people now are realizing, not just here, but around the globe, that the system has to change. It is no longer acceptable, if it ever was, for the top 1% of the global population to continue to stomp on the face of the other 99. What did O'Brien say to Winston Smith? Winston, if you want to see a picture of the future, it's a man with a boot on his face. Well, no. No, it's not. That may be a temporary result because the resistance is going to go up against a tremendous force. Power does not remove itself from the scene willingly. It never has. It never will. But sometimes the mere force of numbers, the mere presence of millions of people saying no, this is enough, will do the trick. And sometimes it won't. Sometimes it won't. Just look at history. Kay Petrini writes, Mike, I find it unbelievable that some people out there still don't get what the Occupy movement is protesting against. For any truth seeker looking for a primer on predatory capitalism, send them to my website, kaysreportcard.com. I just put up a clip from one of your programs in which you elucidated the history and methodology of the greedy bastards who have sent this economy and the American people into a tailspin. It's spot on and very entertaining, too. Well, thanks, Kay. Yeah, go to our website if you like to, kaysreportcard.com. And she has a audio clip, I guess. I think I'll do that, too, later on tonight. All right, stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Third hour of the Malloy program, 7 past the hour. It is church night. After all, it is Wednesday. And if you are new to the program, Wednesday is church night on this program because when I was a kid growing up, Wednesday night was prayer meeting night in the Baptist faith. And I spent most of my summers with my grandparents, and they were Baptists, and so off we went to... to prayer meeting. It was very, very scary for a 6, 7, 8 year old kid. That's one of the reasons I continue to refuse to indoctrinate any of my children with religious superstition nonsense. But that's a different story. Before we get back to celebrating prayer meeting night, the situation in New Zealand is getting worse, and New Zealand? What's he talking about? The oil spill there, the ship that broke up on a reef off the coast of New Zealand. Last night, I think it was, when I shared with you Bob Alexander's piece that he wrote, the latest moment with Bob, titled Noise, about... all the noise that's going on that the media pumps into our heads, when the real story, the only story that's not being talked about, is the fact that the planet is dying. And, of course, I guess we, you know, we have to, and I mentioned last night, we have to avoid and deny thinking about that because, it's very subtle death. It's not noticed, right? I got up this morning and... looked out the window, and it was a nice autumn chill in the air, and the woods behind our house are turning, beautiful colors of fall here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. It rained the past couple of days, so the sky is clearing now, The sky is blue. It's blue and the clouds are white. It's just hard to get a grasp on the fact that we are living on a planet that is dying. The sense doesn't even make sense. We don't pay any attention to that. Planet's dying. Oh, come on, please. Well, anyway, one more stab in the heart of Mother Earth has occurred off the coast of New Zealand, the east coast of New Zealand. And conservationists have warned of an impending wildlife tragedy, their word, caused by this oil spill. What's at risk in New Zealand are populations of penguins, whales, seals, and seabirds. And severe weather warning for the Bay of Plenty, which is near where this tragedy occurred, earlier this week, made it even more possible that this vessel, the Rena, which is carrying about 1,700 tons of fuel oil and 200 tons of diesel, will start to break up. And, of course, that would be horrific consequences for the local marine wildlife. And keep in mind that the Obama administration has begun issuing permits again. All sorts of permits. Parts of the Obama administration have decided to issue permits to build the Keystone XL pipeline from the tar sands region of Canada across the United States down to Houston, further exposing the environment and the ecosystem of, both parts of Canada and the United States. Major aquifer, the Ogallala aquifer that provides fresh water for, several states in the country's midsection. That will be put at risk. The company that is building the pipeline and owns the pipeline and will be transporting the sludge has a record of spills all over the place. So the environmental president, Barack Obama, has turned out to be just the opposite, of course. Just about everything Obama has said has turned out to be untrue. Not untrue, a lie. Back to New Zealand. World Wildlife Fund New Zealand says issued a statement saying that the organization hoped the incident would not prove a tragedy for the region's marine wildlife, which includes, in addition to what I mentioned, bottlenose dolphins, orcas, beaked whales. Large baleen whales also migrate through the area where this oil spill is occurring. A particular concern is the New Zealand dotterel, an endangered shorebird. Now, I remember last night in Bob Alexander's piece, he was mentioning how many species a day are going extinct on the planet. What was it, Kathy? 17 species a day going extinct. Here's another one. The New Zealand dotterel. And of course, your average right-winger will say, I don't give a goddamn about a bird in New Zealand. Right. Of course. According to an advocate for WWF New Zealand, quote, there's only 1,200 dotterels left due to coastal developments, so the last thing they need is their feeding ground contaminated with this sludge. Same spokesman said little blue penguins, that's not indicating that they're from Disneyland, but that's how they're referred to, little blue penguins are also very vulnerable, this man said, as they swim through the oil, fairy turns. No, it's not a dance by the wee folk. A fairy tern is a bird. They frequent the estuary, the WWF person said, and many northern hemisphere birds, like the godwits that have migrated south for spring, are also under threat. So, the incident in New Zealand looks like it's going to up the number of species going extinct. beyond what Bob Alexander had suggested last night. Now, this is an ongoing situation. I mean, let's not pretend that this potential oil spill, it's already in the water, that this is a unique experience, or it's unique to, it may be unique to New Zealand at this point, but the west coast of Africa suffers this ongoing, and not just the west coast, the countries that have the curse of having oil and having that oil being dug out of the ground by companies who are increasing the chances that we're all going to choke to death and die. Those companies don't care. It doesn't make any difference how much pollution. Nigeria is my understanding that Nigeria is practically sinking under the spilled oil from the international oil companies, who just don't give a goddamn. I mean, as far as the people there, the children there, the people who are now suffering diseases and sickness and genetic deformities at birth and shortened life expectancy, it doesn't matter. And of course, the people there are not getting the benefits of the oil. That goes to the multinational oil companies and the executives and the boards of directors, most of whom are Caucasian. And this is what capitalism does. Capitalism does not give a damn about the damage. And it's just like what I was sharing with you a little bit earlier that Tom Friedman wrote in the New York Times today. So the situation is getting worse and worse and worse. Now, as far as New Zealand is concerned, a little bit more on this when we come back, and then we're going to do some more church.
It is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm...
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So it's happening in New Zealand now, off the coast of New Zealand. This massive oil spill as a result of the breakup of a cargo vessel carrying 1,700 tons of fuel oil and 200 tons of diesel. As World Wildlife Fund New Zealand puts it, New Zealand is known as the seabird capital of the world. There are about 85 different species of seabirds that breed there. It's breeding season now. So there are many birds, such as petrels, that are diving into the water to find food for their chicks. The oil makes it difficult for them to fly. And there's a real risk that they will ingest the oil when they preen or pass it on to or into their chicks. It's estimated that up to, that's the end of the quote, it's estimated up to 50 tons of oil already has been jettisoned into the sea. And Radio New Zealand is reporting that 4 of the 1,300 containers aboard RENA, the ship, also carry ferrosilicon, a hazardous substance which is flammable if it comes into contact with water. And it's sitting in the ocean. And according to Maritime New Zealand, humans as well as marine wildlife are also in danger from the spill. The government of New Zealand is urging people not to touch this stuff as it comes up on the shore, as it has started to do on the tourist-friendly Mount Maunganui Beach. despite the efforts of volunteers to begin the cleanup operation. This never stops, does it? It just keeps happening. And so, you know, among the stories that mainstream media do not cover, while they provide the noise for everything else, is the fact that any other issue really is secondary to the fact that the planet is choking to death. And I don't mean the way your mom used to say that. Don't put that in your mouth, you'll choke to death. I mean choking to death. But we can't talk about that. We can't do anything about that. I don't know. It just seems to, seems to me, doesn't it to you, that we would not listen to these right-wing halfwits who insist that, oh, no, nothing's wrong. Global warming, temperatures going up, that's cyclical. It just happens. Well, even if that were the case, wouldn't it make sense not to continue to inject more global warming pollutants into the atmosphere? So it's a topic that is studiously avoided. Can't talk about it because it's too big. I mean, we have situations where we have Palestinians and Jews in a death struggle in the Middle East. We have Republicans and Democrats here in a death struggle. Take a look around the globe. Show me a place where there are no death struggles going on. You know where, and when you remove the nationalist issues. I saw something on current TV the other night about the rise of the skinhead movement, the neo-Nazi movement in Russia. Russia, for God's sake, the country that suffered, what, 30 million deaths? Was it that high? 30 million deaths as a result of the Nazi invasion during World War II? And yet, the largest number of neo-Nazi skinheads on Earth are now in Russia. Astonishing, isn't it? Huh? Isn't that astonishing? But all this stuff is going on while the central issue of survival, it, you know, for the longest time was nuclear weapons. That's what everybody focused on while the planet was starting the process of developing COPD. And it's now progressed to lung cancer. The lungs of this planet are starting to be unable to handle the requirements necessary for us to breathe and for other living species to breathe. And yet we don't, we have to talk about other stuff. We have to be concerned with whether or not rich people or poor people or middle-income people have the proper tax burden. You know, the Republicans want to talk about how, well, the rich shouldn't have to pay any taxes. Corporations shouldn't have to pay any taxes. Those are the two elements that are basically destroying the planet. Those two elements account, and the global rich, I'm not talking about just the rich in this country, but the global wealthy who have total disregard and disdain for, not all of them. These are sweeping generalizations I'm making, and I understand that. But the global corporations that are destroying the planet and don't even want to pay for the burial rights, that's the thing to me that's astonishing.
Hi, truth seekers. It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
A judge in Seattle has, a federal judge there, has ruled or has dismissed a lawsuit by a group that wanted to run advertisements on the bus system there. The ads would accuse Israel of war crimes. And a federal judge says, no. U.S. District Court Judge Richard Jones ruled the other day that King County and Metro Transit officials were not really curtailing free speech by telling the Seattle Middle East Awareness Campaign they couldn't run the ads. No, that may look like free speech or curtailing free speech. It may sound like, if that's not impossible, curtailing free speech. It may stink like it, but it's not that. So don't call it curtailing free speech. The judge decided that he would not allow the ads to be posted. And he said it wasn't because of the content of the ads. Not at all. The ads would have shown a photograph described as children in Gaza next to a building destroyed in the 2008 Israeli invasion of Gaza, and the headline would say, Israeli war crimes, your tax dollars at work. Israeli war crimes, your tax dollars at work. Oh, no. Now, Seattle's Metro Transit system originally agreed to accept the ads, but officials decided against running the ads because of warnings from police about the consequences of running the ads and a backlash that included plans for a counter campaign depicting Israel as the victim of terrorism. A counter campaign depicting Israel as a victim of terrorism. Israel always depicts itself as a victim of terrorism. So what's new? I mean, that's how every single American who follows this issue is told to think. So that argument doesn't hold up. It is the Palestinian people who are never shown as victims of terrorism. But what the Israeli lobby in this country is doing with this issue is exactly what Republicans do. They claim victim status before anything is done, when in fact they're the ones perpetrating the crime. It's an old trick, but as Goebbels pointed out, even old tricks continue to work. So anyway, a spokesman, Ed Mast, a spokesman for the organization that wants to run the ads, said the group is considering an appeal. But the judge said the decision not to allow the ads to be posted did not involve the content of the ads and was in fact a, quote, this is a judge talking, a reasonable restriction on a limited public forum, end quote. Huh? Jesus God. So, yeah, you're not allowed in this country to show Palestinians and, Yahweh forbid, Palestinian children as victims of terrorism. Maybe the children who are blown to pieces and the buildings that are destroyed, the children are victims of not Israeli terrorism. They are victims of the refusal of Hamas to recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel, keeping in mind that no other country on earth that I'm aware of demands that an occupied people recognize the occupier's legitimacy. We don't even do that in the countries we occupy. Of course, we're not there for reasons other than those laid out and forced into the public action by corporate America. Oy. You cannot ever in this country accuse Israel of terrorism, no matter what the state of Israel does. Ever. You may try, but you will find yourself being shouted down. At a news conference today, was it today or yesterday? Romney urged Texas Governor Rick Perry to disavow the remarks of his endorser, Richard Jeffries, a religious right leader, who called Mormonism a cult. Romney, you know, Romney said, well, I'm not a cult. And he wants Perry to say, anyway, People for the American Way's Right Wing Watch has reported on this preacher's remarks about Mormonism, as well as his derogatory comments about Catholicism, Judaism, Islam. Yeah, they're all crazy. Mormons, Catholics, Jews, and Islam. They're all insane. And the only true religion is the kind practiced by this regurgitated freak named Robert Jeffries. And that would be, of course, the hard right Baptist Reconstruction Dominionist, let's all rapture up to Jesus with our pants off kind of religion that's practiced by these crazy people. Everything else is wacko. Somebody ought to, I'd like to meet Mr. Jeffries sometime. I really would. Robert Jeffries, that conversation will last about, or Jeffress. I'd like to meet Mr. Jeffress and tell him, you are one crazy son of a bitch and you're imposing your craziness on other people. Why don't you and the Mormons and the Jews and the Muslims and the other Christians just get off in a room and scream at each other until you all fall down dead? You know, but I don't think I'll ever have that chance. Anyway, People for the American Way today echoed Romney's appeal to Perry, but also urged both candidates to disavow endorsers who have perpetuated misinformation about and fear of American Muslims. In particular, Jay Sekulow of the American Center for Law and Justice. Right, American Center. That's the Nazi version of the ACLU. It's the ACLJ. The ACLU being the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLJ being the American Center for Law and Justice. It is a neo-fascist, did I say Nazi? A neo-fascist organization run by this freak named Jay Sekulow. Anyway, Sekulow has endorsed Romney's last two presidential bids and introduced him last week at the Values Voter Summit. Values Voter Summit. Jesus, God. And he, Sekulow, has published dangerous anti-Muslim rhetoric in a pamphlet titled Sharia Law, Radical Islam's Threat to the U.S. Constitution. In that pamphlet, the ACLJ pushes the myth of a Sharia threat to the U.S. Constitution and asserts that devout Muslims cannot truthfully swear the oath to become citizens of the United States of America. Anyway, Michael Keegan, president of People for the American Way, said, quote, Mitt Romney is right to criticize his rivals for silently standing by and accepting bigotry. Now's the time for Romney to apply those standards to his own campaign. Last weekend, Mitt Romney called Jay Sekulow a treasure. The head of the American... American Center for Law and Justice, a neo-fascist organization, and Romney calls Jay Sekulow a treasure. And as People for the American Way puts it, if Romney wishes to show that he's a true champion of the American values of religious freedom and tolerance, he must apply the same standard to his own endorsers as he does to those of Rick Perry. Really? Oh, what else is up? Religion. It's so disgusting. In Topeka, Kansas, the city council there meeting last night, they had just a regular budget dispute over services. You know, nobody has any money anymore. So they decided one way to balance the budget is to decriminalize domestic violence. That's right. Decriminalize domestic violence. No longer will a woman who's being beat to death or children who are being beat to death, and a call goes from the victims or someone who calls the police, there's a man here beating to death his wife and children, the cops will say, oh, I'm sorry, that's not a crime. You know, call us if he murders them. Okay, then we'll charge him with murder. But domestic violence here in Topeka, Kansas, no longer a crime. the way this happened, three arms of government, all ostensibly representing the same people, according to the New York Times, have been at an impasse over who should be responsible, that means to pay for, prosecuting people accused of domestic violence. City leaders had blamed the county district attorney for handing off such cases to the city. The district attorney, in turn, said he was forced to not prosecute any misdemeanors like this and to focus on felonies because the county commission cut his budget. And county leaders accused the district attorney of using abused women as pawns to negotiate more money for his office. By a vote of 7-3 last night, the city council repealed the local law that makes domestic violence a crime.
Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lies.
Before the hour. And last, but certainly not least, more of the religious right attack on women in this country. It never stops. Now it's being done under the heading of cutting costs in a city budget, of course. Now they're going to drop domestic violence as a crime. But the U.S. House of Representatives is scheduled to vote this week on a new bill that would allow federally funded hospitals that oppose abortion to refuse to perform the procedure, even in cases where a woman's life depends on it. In other words, if a woman comes into an emergency room with a pregnancy-related life-threatening situation and the hospital's policy, as Catholic hospitals' policies are, if the policy is no abortion ever, then the woman can sit there and die, and it'll be okay under this law. Now, under current law, every hospital that receives Medicare or Medicaid money is legally required to provide emergency care to any patient in need, regardless of his or her financial situation. That's why single-payer health care is so desperately needed, or single-payer health insurance is so desperately needed, because in so many instances, the taxpayer winds up paying for these services anyway. I mean, it just happens that way. Of course, the right-wing crazies in this country, never mind, I don't want to get into that again. So, under current law, any hospital that receives Medicare or Medicaid is required to provide this emergency care, regardless. If a hospital is unable to provide what the patient needs, it has to transfer the patient to a hospital that can. Now, under H.R. 358, dubbed the Protect Life Act, kill a woman, I added the last three words. Sponsored by Representative Joe Pitts, Republican, oh, there's a surprise, of Pennsylvania, hospitals that don't want to provide abortions could refuse to do so, even for a pregnant woman with a life-threatening complication that requires a doctor terminate her pregnancy. Now, this provision would apply to the more than 600 Catholic hospitals governed by the Catholic Health Association, which are regulated by bishops, not medical personnel, child molesting bishops. John O'Brien, president of Catholics for Choice, says, quote, unfortunately, in the Catholic system, someone who's a bishop who has no medical qualifications whatsoever can dictate what a hospital does. And bishops have a mindset that's absolutely obsessed with sexual and reproductive health, especially on the issue of abortion. So the diocese is throwing everything into backing this, end quote. They also have a vested interest in making sure that the fetus survives, goes on to term, is born, becomes a child that the bishops can then molest. Oh, is that pushing it a little bit too far? Oh, gee, I'm sorry. It just so happens to work out that way, though, doesn't it? In late 2009, an Arizona bishop excommunicated Sister Margaret McBride, a senior administrator at St. Joseph's Hospital in Phoenix, because she authorized an abortion on a woman who was 11 weeks pregnant and suffering from a potentially fatal case of pulmonary hypertension. The hospital said in a statement, quote, in this tragic case, the treatment necessary to save the mother's life required the termination of an 11-week pregnancy, end quote. The Diocese of Phoenix sharply condemned the hospital's decision to abort the fetus and said in a statement that the mother's life should never take precedence over the fetus's life. Never. Never. The Reverend Thomas Olmsted, the Bishop of Phoenix, said, quote, an unborn child is not a disease. While medical professionals should certainly try to save a pregnant mother's life, the means by which they do it can never be directly killing her unborn child. The end does not justify the means, end quote. It's just, to me, of course, I don't practice any of these ridiculous superstitious theories of death. To me, this is just beyond comprehension. Beyond comprehension. A mother must die so that a fetus, even though an 11-week fetus, a mother must die so that the 11-week fetus can what? It's not going to live either. When the mother dies, you dumb bastard, you robe-wearing freak. Letting the mother die also kills the fetus. But that's apparently not the way the Bishop of Phoenix or the Catholic Church looks at all this. Of course, the Hyde Amendment has been on the books for 30 years. It already bans taxpayer dollars from being spent on abortions and allows anti-abortion doctors to opt out of performing them. So what are the Republicans in the House doing? What the Republicans in the House are so fond of doing? They are continuing their demolition derby on women. And they will continue, these right-wing Republicans, until their goal is achieved. I just wonder how any woman... Oh, never mind. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.